It's the 19th hole with Michael Williams.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host, bringing you the best of the best of the very best in golf and golf lifestyle. I am decompressing after what was really a spectacular U.S. Open 2026 version held at Shinnecock Hills Golf Club. Wyndham Clark, your winner for the second time in 3 years. A 4-under score takes the trophy for him, a great win for him. Sam Burns, so the heartbreaker on 18, finishes one shot behind. It was a great tournament to watch, primarily because of where it was held. Shinnecock Hills is one of my favorite golf courses in the world. I think it's one of the five best golf courses in the world, and maybe possibly the best championship golf course in the world, because it does not disappoint. It does not disappoint, and it's proven that through generations of golfers. It is a marvelous place to have a tournament and to test the ability and the mental toughness of the best professionals of any era. Joining me to talk about that today is one of the best of his era, Adam Shupak. Golf Week is going to join me to talk about the 2026 Open, give the highs, lows, the questions, and maybe an early prediction on the British Open coming up at Royal Birkdale. It should be a great event. I'm really looking forward to that. Let's see. What do we talk about today? Should we just talk about the Open real quick? Yeah, let's do that. For takeaways for the Open, first, I want to go to the course, because the course itself is such a big part of the story when we talk about the Open. We always talk about what the score, the winning score is relative to par. Did the course play up to our standards, U.S. Open standards? And then there's a third thing, which is what we expect the U.S. Open to be, what we want to watch. And I think that largely they did a great job. Job Bodenhammer, really congratulations on what you and the group there at the USGA did. You kept the tournament extremely competitive. You made it fun to watch, and you left the teeth in the golf course, except for day one. And I think that they went a little overboard in protecting the course on day one. Because here's my feeling on the matter. Look, I think the course that day underwent a lot of caretaking to make sure that they didn't lose it and the players' scores weren't too high. And I particularly say, who cares what the players' scores are? Because somebody's going to be ahead and somebody's going to be behind. Okay, that's just the way it is. And if they don't have to close it down because of lane or because of high winds, just let the course play. But there were a number of people. I talked to a number of people who are members at the course, who said that course was playing easier than it would have for them as regular members. If you were a regular member and came out on that day, you go out, they give you a caddy and say, good luck, pal. And they wouldn't have watered the greens as they did. They wouldn't have shortened all of the landing areas as they did. They wouldn't have made the course as playable as they did for those guys. It was really interesting to see how they were able to and how they were willing to make that course play to a certain score that wasn't too high, that wasn't objectionably high. That's when Wyndham, you know, played his best golf. And I think he held on to win, which is just fine, because that score was available, apparently, for a lot of people. He went and got it and went and protected it. But I think that for me, they were trying to prevent something that they didn't have to. I don't see the problem with having a leader after one day four over or five over. You know, if that's what the day gives you, take what the day gives you. If you have to survive it, survive it. You know, I don't see the problem with that. Again, Wyndham Clark did a great job in persevering, even after, you know, in the final round, especially when he was clearly showing the nerves of being in the lead and trying to close out a 54-hole lead on that Sunday. He is a really talented golfer who'd gone through some problems. Remember, famously last year, he had destroyed a locker at Oakmont, which he is no longer welcome to, apparently. And he really managed his game around this tournament. He manages his game around the U.S. Open. And you can see that he is the type of guy who is risk-averse. He kind of reminds me, in a way, not quite as consistent in a way, but he manages his game. There are two golfers that I think about, which are Curtis Strange, who was the last golfer to win those two U.S. Opens together, and you have Tiger, of course, but he's the guy who he reminds me of, Curtis Strange, and that sort of consistency and getting it done and managing to do what the course asks you to do. He also reminds me a bit of Hale Irwin, with the mental toughness to come back and never break. It's sort of the 18th hole. His 18th hole sort of was the composite of his whole week. When he had a 2-putt par from 52 feet, he's 52 feet out on the 72nd hole. A bogey puts him in a tie with Sam Burns, and he 2-putts. He puts that first putt to 51 feet. I mean, he was literally right next to the hole for that putt, and then finished with the par to win. That's sort of the keynote for this round. This guy, he didn't break. He's an epitome of bend but don't break. And you have to feel bad for Sam Burns, who just burned the edge on the 72nd hole with that last putt attempt, just so close to winning. He didn't fall apart like he did at Oakmont, but he toughed it out. He came through and he rose to the occasion. He just came up one shot short. There's been a lot of attention also paid to the fact that so many people were cheering for Scottie Scheffler. And again, I say, is that a surprise to you? You have the number one player in the world playing on Father's Day on his 30th birthday. I mean, come on. What do you expect? I mean, if he was, you know, expecting a child, that would have been the only other thing you could have added to that whole thing. People were really rooting for this guy to close out and to close out for the career Grand Slam. He's a guy who is a tremendously talented golfer, arguably the most talented of his generation. And he's going to have his day. He only finished four shots off the winning score at a time when he was clearly struggling with his game and with some shots. I felt like he wasn't going to get there when I saw his shot on number one. When he hit the ball over the green on number one, I thought, well, that's just not a good sign that he's got it figured out. He wasn't completely on point with his putter like he has been in some of his wins. So you have to have something that's working perfectly for you in this level of championship at this level of golf course. Something has to be working perfectly. And he was kind of like at the 6.5, 7 on all phases of his game. So he battled valiantly, but didn't really get it done. And the sort of last guy I'm going to talk about is Rory. I don't have where Rory finished here. I had it in front of me. But the guy, I tell you, he's an interesting person, because you love his swing. You love to watch him play. You love to to see, I mean, particularly seeing him drive the ball, it's just art to watch him do it. It's amazing to me to watch a person who is that small do something that just physically imposing, the way he drives the ball, the way he hits irons, the sheer length of the guy. But he is clearly missing something in the, I want to say, the mental part of the game. And I think it has to do with a certain type of toughness, grit, and maybe even anger. Maybe even it's anger. And I would challenge, I may even ask Adam when he comes on later, have you ever seen Rory angry? Have you ever seen him completely pissed off? Because you've seen John Rahm pissed off famously. He had to rein it in order to get to his championship level. He had to get his anger and his emotions under control. That's never really been a problem for Rory. He's always been a laid back, almost lackadaisical type of personality on the golf course. And people always characterize him with this. When he's winning, he's always like a puppy. It's like he's bouncing along, and he's got this like short stride, and you know, he's always he's really happy. You can see it. And then when he's down, when he's not hitting putts, when he's not hitting his wedges close, he's sort of, his tail's between his legs, and his head is hanging, and he like doesn't know why he's making. I think what he could use is a little bit of good old-fashioned red ass. He needs to just get a little bit angry about what's happening out there. The guy who really occurred, well, two guys. One guy who won at Shinnecock, Ray Floyd, he had that in spades. He had that. And another guy is Tom Watson. Tom Watson would get pissed off. I think there's the golfers in that generation weren't afraid of their emotions. They channeled their anger. And this current generation is a lot more, I'd say, robotic, because it implies that it's all negative, but they're just not as into using and channeling emotion as a previous generation is. And I think that Rory could use some of that. He could use some of that anger, some of that motivating force to get him to what I think he still has. I think he still has another level within him. I think he has another level, but he has to fight to get there. He has to want to get there. The last guy who had that, of course, was, depending on who you talk to, the greatest golfer ever, Tiger Woods. He was pissed. He was pissed all the time. You know, he was mad at, you know, where his ball landed. He was, it should have been 5 feet, not 7 feet. That putt should have gone in the center, not the right. He was mad. No matter, even if good things happened, he was pissed off and used it as an incentive to do better. He was just that type of player. And I think a lot of players, especially Rory, could do with a little bit of that chafe in them to get them to perform up to their ability. You want to do better. You know, you don't want things, good things to happen for you. You want to perform at the level you're capable of. And I still am waiting for that. Even with all of his achievement, with all of his current achievement, all that he's done, I'm still waiting for something from Rory. And I don't think I'm the only one, but I'm still waiting for something that I haven't seen in maybe 10 years. And maybe we'll never will see it. Maybe we will. But I think it's out there. It's in there. And I'd love to see something or someone be able to get that out of him. And what a sight it would be to see. Rory at another level would be quite something to see. Again, it was a great championship. I thoroughly enjoyed it. We'll talk to Adam a little bit about the crowd, because he was there. I was not. And I want to talk to him a little bit about the crowd and what their effect was on the group. But long short, for me, Shinnecock, I mean, they have this little rotation of courses that they do. To me, Shinnecock may be the purest open test in America. It is beautiful. It's a beautiful place. It's pure golf. It's absolutely pure golf. It would be pure golf anywhere on the planet. And it has anointed Wyndham Clark as a big tournament guy. You have two U.S. Opens. Doesn't matter what you do for the rest of your career. Two U.S. Opens means a lot. It says something about you, something good about you. And congratulations. If I can get him on the show, I will. Believe me, I'm trying. But I would love to talk to him and see what is in him. And interestingly enough, if we can get it to come out on a more regular basis, you know, so we can get to 15 wins, 25 wins, 35 wins. How do you do that? How do you get what fuels him on open week to fuel him every week? That would be my question for him. Again, great tournament. Can't wait for the next major at Royal Birkdale. We'll talk to our guest, Adam Shupak, about that and a whole bunch of other stuff. But it's going to be a great show. Please stay with us. Go get yourself a cold beverage, a crunchy snack. We'll be right back with more golf and stuff. Stay with us. Michael Williams, 19th hole.
Hi, Michael. This is Barbara Nicholas. You've got a great voice. We love hearing what you have to say, and we wish you the best for many years.
Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. Again, still all aglow and all aflutter from the 2026 U.S. Open won by Wyndham Clark with a respectable, well, more than respectable score of 4 under. It was, for me, it's always a joy to watch. I love watching the U.S. Open. I call it the most wonderful time of the year because I love watching great golf and I love watching great golfers get humbled. And there's no course that's better at doing both of those things, providing both of those things in Shinnecock Hills. There's no writer who's better than talking about that than my next guest. He's a senior writer for Golf Week and for USA Today. He's also one heck of a nice guy. Please welcome Adam Shupak back to the 19th hole. Adam, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Doing well. That was a very nice introduction, I must say. Thank you so much for all those kind words. And yeah. Loved being at Shinnecock last week. I'm a New York native, so, you know, kind of not quite, you know, I'm way out there on the island. I forgot how far out it is there, but
yeah.
Really great to spend some time getting to the city for one day and enjoy you know, the old stomping ground, so to speak.
Yeah, it really is a very special place out in the Hamptons, of course. I know that you're there every weekend, probably on your boat and the whole thing. it really is a special place, and the golf is special there. I personally think there are courses that are as good, but I don't know if there's a better venue for the U.S. Open than Shinnecock Hills. And before we talk about any of the players, I feel like we have to talk about the course, and that's my feeling about the course. I think it's just the quintessential U.S. Open track. In your mind, would you give the course and the USGA a letter grade for how they prepared the course for this championship?
Well, it's not an F like the past year, so we got that going for us. You know, they didn't let the course get away. I think they did okay. You know, it was a little soft the first couple days. Yeah. We saw, you know, Wyndham Clark, when the wind died down a bit, able to go out and shoot 64. But they, you know, they needed to be careful. They couldn't afford another blemish on their record. I think there was, you know, no one will say it publicly, but I think if the USGA had another problem here, I don't think Shinnecock would have, I think they would have bowed out of the 2036 US Open. I think Wow. They would have said enough is enough. This isn't working for us yet. I heard some of that from some reliable sources. So I think they were erred on the side of caution. They, you know, they didn't cut the greens the way they normally would. They syringed the greens in between play, in between the waves, to try to avoid losing any greens and make it as fair for both sides of the field. They were the greens were running 10. I mean, that's like unheard of at a US Open. So they I think they went maybe they went a little too far, but you know, we still didn't see exceptional scoring. And amazingly, like the wind didn't even get as bad as they thought it might get as the as it was forecasted to be. So I mean, it could have been a real, like they said, it could have been brutal. That could have made it a bloodbath. They decided not to. And then it got, then they ratcheted it up a little on Saturday. Saturday definitely was tougher. Sunday actually was the easiest. The scoring average was the lowest it's ever been, the final round at Shinnecock for the US Open. And it also was, you know, ranks among, I can't remember if it was, I don't know, I think it might've been the second lowest scoring average in the final round of the US Open. So it wasn't incredibly difficult the last day, but you know, it wasn't easy either. I think it's, I agree with you. It's a museum piece that has stood the test of time. It's still, it's a great test of golf for these guys. And it, you know, it was a bit of a, you know, I don't think Wyndham just won with power, although, you know, he is another bomber, and but he had to putt out of his mind. He putted like Retief Goosen in 2004. It really was reminded me a lot of that. And his short game was better than anyone I saw all week.
Yeah, I think you hit on all the same points that I did in my opening of the show about what got him to victory there. And just staying with the golf course, I just have to say, because in my open, I said, look, if the first round plays and you come out with a leader after day one, who's seven over, I really wouldn't care, you know, because at the end of the day, somebody's got to lead and somebody's got to be behind him and somebody's got to be behind him, so on and so on and so on. And whether it's seven under or seven over doesn't really make a difference to me. Actually, seven under would make a difference to me. Seven over, though, just points to the difficulty of the course, of the moment, of the weather, all those things. And I love Bonehammer and all those guys. I think they did a great job in terms of they did exactly what they wanted to do, was to try to keep this in the realm of reasonable scoring for most people. But if it gets a little high, I say, I don't care. It's the most wonderful time of the year. And to see these guys, you know, sort of flame up like a bunch of losing racers on Speed Racer, hitting the wall and bursting into flames, I'm fine with that. You know, I don't know. Am I alone in that feeling? Am I completely out of control? Or do people really want to see necessarily guys be six under, seven under? I don't need to see that. Do you need to see that? I don't need to see that.
I see that enough on other weeks. I really want this to be the toughest test in golf. I think that that was always its reputation. I'm trying to identify the best player. And I think they had a few opens that weren't what we really wanted it to be. You know, it's, I don't know if we want to get into the whole golf ball rollback right away, or if you even want to talk about that at all, but
oh, we will.
You know, the USGA, Okay. Well, the USGA, I think they're trying their hardest to get this golf ball rollback through, because you know, last decade you really have to be a basher, a bomber to win the US Open. And it used to be, you know, we don't have to go just 95 at Shinnecock.
Yes.
Corey Pavin.
There's
no Corey Pavins or Scott Simpsons winning him, or it used to be you had to hit it in the fairway and control your golf ball if you wanted to have a chance to win. And
well, you got, you know, one. All the guys, you got Brian Harman, you can point to at the British Open a couple of years ago. That's one.
At the British Open, but at the US Open, it's been Bryson twice. It's been Brooks Koepka twice.
Yep.
And Wyndham Clark twice. And John Rahm, you know, the other guys who won once, also bombers. So I don't think that's what the USGA wants. I think there's a lot of reasons they want a ball rollback, but I think they also feel like we're testing who can hit it the farthest as much as anything now.
Yeah. I mean, the big guys, you know, have their strength, and it's not only hitting out of the fairway to a shorter, having a shorter second shot. as Wyndham Clark showed, getting out of trouble, the way that he was able to lash the ball out of trouble was really, to me, one of the most impressive things I've seen in a long time. He hit some balls out of trouble that were just extraordinary, and that's largely because of his clubhead speed and his strength. I don't know how much the ball has necessarily to do with that. So I don't know if you can't roll back the players, right? You can't say, you know, you have to be, you can be no more than this tall to ride this ride. So you do have to do something about maybe the golf ball. So you're for a golf ball rollback, essentially, since we're here.
Yeah, I think I am. I'm okay. I really think I'm probably more in favor of bifurcation. There's just this 0.1% that is taking advantage, that really hits it too far. And I feel like I feel like we already have bifurcation in the game with, you know, we play from different tees,
yes.
Equipments. It's not really the same. They might like to promote it as such, but I just think there's a lot of ways that there already is bifurcation in the game. And I don't have any problem. I don't, you know, if I were to play in a softball game, I would go bring a wooden bat to play because that's what they use in Major League Baseball. I'm going to use the aluminum bat. And I don't have a problem with, I would want the ball that goes, that doesn't go 20 yards shorter. I don't really want to see the ball roll back for me, but at the same time, I'm like, if they're only going to do it this one way, I still feel like, I just want to see a better brand of professional golf and not have the courses continue to be stretched farther and farther. And, you know, what was it? I think at the PGA, there was a 550 yard par four. And it's like, where are we going? What are we doing here?
Yeah. 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 Exactly. I mean, guys hitting, you know, 8 and 9 irons into the green on par fives. That's, and at the beginning, it's exciting. When you have one or two guys doing that, it's exciting and it's impressive. And I remember when John Daly was doing that, I was like, oh my God, who is this guy? But when you have like a third to 40% of the field doing that, it's not as exciting. It points to a weakness in some other element of the game rather than a strength of all those guys. So I get you with the ball rollback and how they do it, the business of how they do it. That's going to be interesting to see how they accomplish that. I have nothing to do with it, but it's going to be interesting to see how they accomplish it.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a fight for a while. I don't think, they pushed it back another 2 years already. Now we're at 2030, and I don't know. I'm not convinced that they won't go push back even farther once they, you know, if there's still a lot of negotiating to be done. And I don't know if I do feel like I talked to Paul Azinger about this and had it in one of my stories. He was at the memorial and kind of heard a whole presentation from the USGA and the PGA Tours, kind of where they think. And he said he didn't think that they can collaborate on this and come up with something that everybody's going to like, mm-hmm. that it really just needs to be the USGA and the RNA saying, look, this is how it's going to be. And it's probably the right, like they're the ones who can look 50 years out and say, this is what's good for the game versus like the guys on the PGA Tour. You know, I think they do. I understand like it's got to stink if all of a sudden, you know, this is going to affect you, you know, this is going to affect Russell Henley more than it's going to affect Tony Finau. And so you're going to be at a disadvantage, but that's life. Like get better at your short game, you know, go to the gym and figure out how to hit it farther. If you're going to lose more distance, like that's just what we have to do. And in pretty much any field, we have to try to figure out how to get better. And it's not always like, it's not necessarily always an even playing field. These guys are thinking in the 2 to 3 year, you know, spectrum of their career, which I totally get. And there's a lot of money at stake for these guys.
Yeah.
But the game, like it's just changed so much. And it doesn't seem, every year it seems like there's another guy who hits it farther. And so eventually, like people used to, I sat down with Gary Player at the PGA Championship and he said, people used to laugh at me when I said that somebody was going to hit it 400 yards. And, you know, now we're seeing that happen. And guys, you know, he said there's no such thing as a par five anymore for these pros. And he's pretty much right.
He is right about that. You are listening to the wise words of Adam Shupak, senior writer for Golf Week in USA Today, here on the 19th hole. Michael Williams, still your host in Sherpa. Let's talk a little bit about the winner, Wyndham Clark. He went it for the second time, LA Country Club, the first time here now at Shinnecock. Two wins, two coasts, and yet he seems to be one of the more underappreciated U.S. Open champions. Would you agree with that? And if so, why is he that way?
Underappreciated. That's not the word. I think it's just, I haven't seen a guy that he's just unlikable. It was really hard to figure out. And I settled on it. It was, I'm being serious. It's a combination of things. I think there are people that really don't like him because of his childish behavior, the way he destroyed the lockers at Oakmont a year ago.
Yep.
The way he threw his club in frustration at the PGA Championship a year ago, and just go, this guy's not my cup of tea. I want to root against this guy. And he's become, you know, Liv took all the villains. They took the Patrick Reeds and the Sergios and guys like that. You know, even Bryson was a villain for a while.
and remains to this day in my mind.
So the PGA, yeah. The PGA Tour has lacked a villain. And so he's kind of I don't want to judge him because, you know, I've been dealing with my temper with golf for years. And, you know, sometimes my wife doesn't want to play with me because I take it too seriously. And I don't like it when I play poorly. I don't throw clubs, but I can whine and complain and be, you know, not fun to be with the best of them. So like I can, Wyndham Clark did is a little bit relatable. I don't think I can't imagine ever kicking in a locker at a club where I'm a guest, let alone at my home club. But, you know, so I think people really don't like him for that. And then the other silly things. I'll give you an example. When he won a couple weeks before at the CJ Cup, I was listening to Sirius XM and they interviewed him after. They said, what are you going to do tonight? How are you going to celebrate? You know, kind of standard question. And he said he's going to go out to dinner and we're probably going to open some grape. And I thought, it's kind of a clever way, a different way of saying I'm going to drink some wine. But I put his quote out on social media and over a million people, this thing went viral. Over a million people viewed this thing and the comments were filled with such hate and disgust about him. It was shocking to me how much hate there was directed towards this guy who just won a golf tournament. It really bothered me that people would be this way to begin with. I guess, you know, that's what people do is they go on social media and they say what they would never say in person to somebody. The other part of it was he was up six strokes and people wanted to see history. It was Scottie Scheffler's 30th birthday. He's playing in that final group. And if he wins, he's going to win the career grand slam. So everybody wanted, I mean, rightfully so, people want to say I was there for this great event and saw Scottie Scheffler create his, you know, just the seventh player to win the career grand slam. So they wanted, yeah.
Go ahead. You go. No, you go ahead. I was just going to say that in my opening, I said that, you know, the guy, it's his 30th birthday. It's Father's Day. I mean, the only other thing would be if he or his wife was pregnant, you know, then maybe he'd have had even more support. But that's about as much support as you can get going around a golf course. In addition to being a rather popular player and probably one of the best we've seen, not probably, certainly one of the best we've seen in his generation. So to have the good guy, bad guy, so clearly set up in a twosome. It doesn't surprise me that Wyndham Clark doesn't get the love in that particular grouping. But I think, as you said, he goes a long way towards earning all the dislike that he has. The online stuff is something completely different because a lot of cowards out there. I've said it before, and I've said it to people's face. You are a coward for saying that online in that way. You know, say it to his face. But he doesn't do anything to change your mind about it either. So anyway, I digress. Please go ahead with what you're saying.
So it was incredibly difficult situation for him playing out there, and I really thought when he had that ball come back down to his feet and at the par five, the fifth hole, the easiest hole on the course, and he made bogey from the fairway, I thought, wow, this could spiral out of control really quickly. And you know, the weird thing was Scotty did not pounce on the opportunity, because he could see that he was playing right with them, and Wyndham was falling apart, and Scotty never made. He was just stuck in neutral. His round reminded me a little of Rory McIlroy at the 2022 Open Championship at St. Andrews, when he just. The only birdie he made was on a par five with a two putt. It was kind of the same type of day for Scotty. He just, he made a few putts for par, but he couldn't make any of the putts when he needed to, and never really put any pressure on Clark. It was, he really says like he's not focused on the career Grand Slam. It's not something he dreamed of the way Rory did. And he's just tries to stay in the present and just prepare the best he can. But I think it must have gotten to him a bit, because he just played a little stiff and a little just not his typical performance. And you know, he's gonna have other chances, probably win it next year and get that career Grand Slam out of Pebble Beach. It'll still be Father's Day. It won't be his birthday, but it'll still be a pretty awesome story. Because that feels like one of those ifs, because he's just, you know, Scotty's just an extraordinary talent. Feels like, you know, finishing T4 felt like a terrible week for him.
Yeah, exactly. He has set the bar very, very high for himself, and rightfully so. Again, one of the best, if not the best, of his generation. The only other player who's in that category is Rory McIlroy, and I talked about him in the Open. I wanted to talk about him with you, because I feel as though Rory has, you know, completed the career Grand Slam. He's won a lot of tournaments. He's done a lot of impressive things. When you see him hit the ball, you wonder why every ball doesn't finish within 6 inches of where it's intended to go, because his swing is such a masterpiece. It's a Rembrandt of a golf swing. To me, there's something about his attitude that has something missing from a winning attitude. And I think it's a little bit of saltiness. It's a little bit of red ass. He seems to take it whichever way it goes. He'll take the beating. And guys in a different generation, including a winner at Shinnecock, Ray Floyd, was the complete opposite. Ray Floyd would just as soon hit you as hit the golf ball, you know, when he's out there on a Sunday. He is that type of competitor. Tom Watson, the same way, the underdog, but had a seething anger underneath. He had that competitive spirit. Even Jack Nicklaus is not really talked about a lot. This guy was a red hot competitor. Gary Player, who you just mentioned, all these guys had that competitiveness. I see a great golfer in Rory. I don't necessarily see a great competitor in Rory, and I think that holds him back. What's your opinion?
Yeah, I think that I kind of agree with you. To an extent, I think that's really what that's part of what held him back from winning 10 plus majors. I think about with Rory is, you know, they always say you got to be a really selfish person to win, to be a great champion. I think like Lee Trevino says, like he wasn't a good father because he was so obsessed with just his golf and trying to achieve what he could on the golf course and make as much money as he could, because he came from nothing. And I think Rory is just such a well-balanced, like, kind of human being in a different way, that I think that I think, to be that person that he is and still win the same number of majors as at right now as Lee Trevino or Nick Faldo, another guy who was, you know, had the blinders on and knew how to close things out a little bit better. I think it's pretty impressive that he's kind of got the best of both worlds. So I think Rory still, the fact that he was able to check off another major already this year, I think this year's already a win. He definitely started to get on the, you know, it felt like he was in the verge of being part of the trophy hunt, and then just had a disastrous back nine on Saturday.
Right.
There were just a few, he just wasn't super sharp. And it really, even like when he won the Masters, didn't seem like he had his A game. He got away with an erratic driver. And I think he's still kind of searching for the game, but it'd be, you know, if I think the British Open is a major that he, you know, he really hasn't, he won it the one time in 14, but of the various majors, that seems to be the one that he's had the hardest time winning a second time, because there haven't really been that many great opportunities. I guess I mentioned St. Andrews in 22 when he was in the,
yeah,
it kind of, I think in Liverpool, he was in the, you know, one of the contenders. That was another one that he was around the lead, but never really felt like he was going to win. If he could come up with a big week in a, you know, 3 weeks from now, and a two major season would be pretty extraordinary for him. I think he's just a little off, and I think golf, you know, he's trying to build just around the majors, and I wonder if he'll in a year or two start thinking, you know what, I should maybe play a little more PGA Tour stuff to get ready and to be a little more polished as I go into these big events. You know, he really has been skipping a lot of these signature events. He's not playing again this week. He's not going to play in the U.S. at all before. I guess he'll play the Scottish, the week before. But you know, he's really like feels like very much a part time player right now.
I think I agree with you on all counts. I think we both agree that he is one of the. You spent time with him. I spent time with him. He's one of the most thoughtful young men that I have ever met, and I really appreciate talking to him and discussing things with him. He's an interesting person. He's a balanced person, but in order to achieve, and he's achieved what he has being that person, to achieve what he could achieve, maybe he has to be a little bit more like, I'll say Kobe Bryant is an example. Cause that Kobe, Kobe yeah. was a son of a bitch, right? I mean, he just was in every single way. But look at what he accomplished in that young, interrupted life. And you can name one after another the champions who are great. And it's very difficult to name a nice guy in one of those lists while they're playing. They can all be nice after they're playing, but it's quite another thing. Rory's managed to be an incredible achiever while being an exceptional human being. And I wonder what happens if he decided to be an okay guy, if he would push that into the development of his game. Remains to be seen. We will see. Real quickly, I want to get to a couple of things before I let you go. We had some PGA Tour news with Brian Rolapp being named as commissioner, and I believe he was CEO before. I want to ask you, is there any difference between the two titles or his responsibilities or his pay grade or anything? Is there any difference between the two titles?
That's a good question about if he does he get a pay bump out of that. I hadn't thought about that yet. Probably. I don't think there's too much. I was wondering if there would be somebody that would kind of take over the Jay Monahan role and kind of manage more of a golf guy who could manage the day-to-day stuff while Brian does the big picture and figures out how to make this business work. So I thought that there could be some secondary person to him. But I asked the chairman of the board, Joe Gorder, yesterday when I was in Hartford at the press conference about that choice. And he said that they just didn't want there to be any ambiguity that, you know, this is, you know, Brian's running the ship, and he's the guy. So yeah, he's added that second title. My guess is, I asked him actually at, I think it was his press conference last year in Atlanta, about the commissioner role. And he said he's not really that interested in titles. And he was going to, he wasn't too concerned about it. But I think the title is something, if he was taking a lie detector test, you know, the guy was the number two at the NFL, and he wasn't getting the job for a while from Commissioner Goodell. So when this opportunity came along, I think he wanted to be commissioner. I think that's something he probably aspired to. He may still aspire to be the NFL commissioner. He might go, in five or so years when Goodell's ready to, sign off and enjoy his retirement. Yeah. I like what he's trying to do. I just got to see if it can really come to fruition.
And what he's trying to do is this two-tier system where you have, starting, I think, not next year, but the year after 2028, I believe it starts, and you have a champion and a challenger, I think, is the second level, and there could be free movement for win two in the challengers, and you get advanced immediately into the championship category and other category. You probably looked at it a little more closely than I have, but do you think this is something that is going to get, number one, the players excited? Number two, will it make any difference to fans at all?
Yeah, I think for fans, it's going to be nice to know where the best players are going to be playing. I like going back to a larger fields, 120 versus the 70 player field. I think the players are going to be happy. You know, that's something that the rank and file didn't like, that they didn't really have a chance to play in these big events. So there's going to be cuts, which I also think is very important. So I think like simplifying, it's great. I like this idea of a tour championship with match play and potentially bringing it to, they're calling prestigious courses. And, I've heard some chatter about investigating into Cypress Point and Pine Valley and making it more of a TV show than the typical PGA Tour build out with hospitality everywhere and, 30,000 fans. It's going to be maybe five, kind of like they did with the Walker Cup. If it were, say, at Cypress, have 500 to 1,000, VIPs and just, it'd be a great TV show to see some of the best, see the best players playing the best courses in the world, mano a mano in match play. I think it could be awesome. Could be really awesome. Could make the tour championship finally something that people are really interested in.
And I hear to close out here that they're maybe going to match play for the season ending. Is that going to be for all the events, or is that just going to be for one of them, or did they make it clear on that?
I think it will be the final. They're probably going to go from two playoff events down, from three down to two. And I'm not 100% sure if there's going to be, I'm not quite sure exactly. There's some talk of like almost like a World Cup type.
Pools
where you play various matches against guys, and the top ones will advance then to the finals, which would be match play.
Interesting.
Like a match play bracket.
Very interesting stuff. Last thing.
There's a lot of details, very, very light on specific details. We don't know what are going to be the signature events, what are going to be the challenge events, that the 20 million for the top events, 4 million purse for the for the Challenger events, and you know, these guys are gonna, 20 spots, 20 people will be elevated, 20 relegated. So that all of that's gonna be very interesting to track and see how that works. And you know, these guys, you know, there'll be a lot on the line late in the season. So there's still a lot of details on the eligibility and this and that. They're not going to be mandated to play every event. But I think, you know, if you're going to want to keep your card, you might have to play pretty close to all of them.
Yeah.
You might be able to take, you know, the top, like Rory might be able to play a little less than Sung J.M., but not that much.
That's good comparison. just before I let you go, Tiger made some of the announcements there at that press conference. Tiger, just how do you look to you? Do you think he'll play again? And do you think he's getting a pass from the whole golf media for what he's done and what he's gone through? Do you think he's getting a pass from everybody and all that stuff?
I thought it was kind of strange the way they did it yesterday. You know, he kind of walked out to open the press conference and talked for, I don't think any more than a minute, just a really quick introduction, and then just stood in the back of the room and listened. There was no event media availability with him. That not too much of a surprise, but
right.
It's just hard to get, you know, I guess that was their way of putting him back out in the public eye for a hot second. Is he getting a pass? I don't know. It's a tough one. It's a tricky one. Yeah, I mean, he's very lucky he didn't not only lose his own life, but potentially, you know, harm other people, other people who were driving on the road. He's still got a lot of answers, and I guess we're gonna have to wait for him to do that on his own timetable.
Yeah.
I do think that there probably will create a scenario where he's exempt into these tournaments if he wants to. To me, the biggest question is, can he play? Can he play without pain if he's not taking all these drugs that he's been trying to get off of? On a regular, you know, it seemed like what he had to go through just to be able to play the little bit that he did was pretty intense. And I'm not sure. I feel like there's more of a chance he's going to play the Champions Tour, if anything.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. It's mixed emotions seeing him up there. There's a lot more questions than answers, but you know, thank God that's the case for all of us who have to write all this stuff for a living, right? So onward and upward. Adam, thank you so much for taking the time. We really appreciate it. And can't wait to have you back. Maybe after our next major championship, you can give us your breakdown of that one too. In the meantime, go out and play some golf, buddy. You deserve it.
All righty. Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's Adam Shupak, the senior writer for Golf Week and USA Today. It was a great championship. I love Adam because he gives such thoughtful answers. You hear him noodling these things through as he gives his answers. It's not knee-jerk. It's not from the hips. Very thoughtful, very considered answers to these questions. And when you look at the course at Shinnecock, I think the any chance we get to see a course like that, a wonderful masterpiece like that, is good. Could it have been set up a little differently for those first couple of days? Maybe. But if it was a matter of having the score where it is and not having it there anymore, I'll take the score every time. I'll take whatever score we need to make sure that we get back to Shinnecock Hills again and again and again. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19th hole. Well, Well, that's it, and that's all for this edition of the 19th Hole. I want to thank my very special guest, Adam Shupak. He is one of the most knowledgeable, one of the most eloquent people in the whole business of writing and telling stories about golf. I'm so pleased that he was able to spend some time with us. I'm sure you learned something. If you didn't, what's wrong with you? Yeah, thank you all for listening. By the way, you can get this show and all the other shows of the 19th Hole on great podcast destinations like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever great podcasts and other broadcast elements are available. Again, as I was saying, thank you very much for listening. We do it all for you. Be back next week for another edition of the 19th Hole, where we will give you the very best that we can possibly gin up in this magnificent world of golf. In the meantime, the weather's fine. So go out, hit some balls, and when you do, please do your very best to hit them straight. Michael Williams, 19th Hole.